you know, to some extent, this is not the best way for the people involved. And it, I think the government just has not done a very good job. And they've been caught on the back foot repeatedly. And it's also they're not thinking about the issue in a systematic way, because it's the way the government thinks about it is very reactive, right? They get a lawsuit from a human rights group, and then they will say, oh, we'll do all these things. But they really need to plan ahead a little bit more, kind of try and accurately project out how many migrant claimants are they going to receive, and make arrangements for that accordingly, because that's not happened in the UK. Mm-hmm. It is made worse by the fact that the UK is not in the EU, so it does not have the ability to repatriate a migrant claimant to another EU nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really made the problem much, much worse. But of course, you can see the compounding populisms of people who wanted to quit the EU, and now they have problems with migrants. And the two problems kind of feed into each other a little bit. So, because if anything, the European Union itself has actually made a lot of progress in the migration issue by working with nations in North Africa, for example.
Right.
So what they call intercept nations like Libya, Tunisia, and so forth. And if you look at the latest data in The Economist, I think it's something like a 50-60% decline in unauthorized Mediterranean crossings.
Yeah, and those are countries where migrants often come first before trying to make a crossing to Europe, whether it's by whatever method they're using.
And it's about being proactive, right? Like, this is a big enough issue for Europe that they're investing something like $600 billion, $700 billion, a large amounts of money to try and create opportunities for people to stop over in these nations without having to cross again the Mediterranean to Europe.
Yep.
And you really need to proactively invest in these resources. And I think that the UK response has been so reactive and so back-footed, it hasn't been able to do that. And as a result, it's not very successful at the moment.
Great. Any closing words?
It's a very complex world, and I think we should not take any assumptions about where it's going to go too definitely, and that includes about Canada.
All right. Thank you for that, Stephen. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, and we're going to get on to Bird Note in just a moment. But first, we have this message.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more. Right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
Are we experiencing dead air now, Magnus?
This is Bird Note. My name is Kelson Caldwell, and I drive a bus for King County Metro. As a bus driver, your schedule is pretty important. Sometimes you run late, and there's nothing you can do about that. I was driving a route, and I kept running fast, and then I would pull over to the side of the road, and I'd just be kind of like twiddling my thumbs, worrying about what my passengers are thinking, and I wanted to find something to occupy my mind. And so I started to look for birds as my pastime. I was just like, oh, wow, look at those ducks. And then, oh, look at those crows. And that was kind of this weird entry point into becoming a lot more interested in, like, why are the birds going here at this time of day? And where do they hang out? Or what makes it possible for that bird to, like, stay here during the winter?
Driving the same route each day, Kelson noticed as new birds returned with the spring migration, and how crows would fly off to roost together at night. Now, no matter where Kelson is, they see birds everywhere. Once you start paying attention to birds, it's hard to stop.
Though I will mind you, I like keep my eyes on the road, obviously. Major part of my job.
For Bird Note, I'm Ashley Ahern.
All right, it's time for Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio here is our gardens expert, Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability. Welcome, Pablo.
Nice to be here. Morning.
So it's officially, we're officially into fall now.
Correct. Yes, last weekend we moved from summer to fall. And yeah, the weather is reminding us the cold weather is coming.
Yeah. And here, you know, here in Vancouver or Burnaby, where we specifically are, you know, some of those indications start in towards the end of August. And we get little hints and back and forth, you feel the difference.
Correct.
But now we're officially into fall.
Yeah.
And we're going to see a lot more of this cooler weather. And we're not really getting the really hot weather that we were earlier, of course.
Yeah, so we had a very nice dry and sunny summer.
Yeah.
And at the end of summer as well, we were thinking, by mid-August, we were thinking, we should start cooling off now. But no, the weather keep going nice. But yes, after this weekend and today, for instance, we have Burnaby Mountain was covered with clouds. And we had a mist, very damp air, and lots of dew, which just remind us as a gardener that if we are collecting seeds, this is the time to just bring the seeds indoors. So in our case, we have corn growing outside. All the corn has died. We have the corn ears there in the plant still. So this reminds me, like, harvest this corn and bring it inside, not to get damped, and so we can have us dry seeds for the next year.
So what are the main plants we're looking at collecting seeds from?
Usually we have lots of cilantro or coriander, where we collect that. Beans is another one. Peas. And the other one that we have is tomatoes.
Yeah.
And that's very important because our tomato plants in the student building garden, they are loaded. We have cherry tomatoes. And we've been harvesting, but still there's a lot. And with this weather, if rain will come soon, all these tomatoes will burst because the plant still is taking water and sending to the fruits, and the fruits have reached their maturity, their full size, so there is nowhere to store water, and they will just burst.
And is that kind of how the plant spreads its seeds, by getting to the end of the season?
Well, yes, by the end of the season, the fruits will drop, and the water will take the seeds that are from the fruits that are rotting and just move them around. So wind and the rain helps to distribute the seeds. So this is the time to start thinking, okay, the wood weather is gone, dry weather is gone, cold weather and wet weather is coming, and we need to remove all our seeds from one side, so the garden will start slowly decreasing their growing, no more pruning, because plants just start stop growing, so no more pruning. And the other thing that we have to do is we as a gardener is like prepare ourselves. We garden year round, and where I put my rain gear after this awesome summer, I was like, where is my rain gear? Where are my Wellington boots or my rubber boots? And so this is the time to start preparing that. The worst thing is that rain comes and you just don't know where your gear is. If you found your gear and you didn't check it, you put it on and suddenly you start feeling, all the water is moving in. It's not anymore waterproof. And the worst thing is when you have your rubber boots and you're outside and you start feeling, my feet are getting, feet is getting leaky. So I'm like, that's the awful thing. Like, so as well, check that your rubber boots, your rain gear, is in perfect conditions for the next rain season. And the other thing is as well, start thinking, if I'm going to garden over the winter, I need to have my warm gloves. Because the regular gloves, they don't work, so waterproof, nice warm gloves, so we can feel comfortable outside.
Because a cold day with wet hands working in wet soil is not going to be fun.
No. And after 1 hour, your hands complain, like, I'm cold. And it's not pleasant to be outside wet. We should remember there is no bad weather. We are not dressed properly for the weather. So we gardeners know that we have to be dressed properly. It can rain, can be cold, no problem. We are outside.
So jumping back to the seeds for a second, we're collecting the seeds. What do we do with them now? How do we store them safely, properly, so they're going to be ready to go come the spring and when we're planting?
Yeah, so what we have to do, for instance, if you harvest the seeds, dry seeds, and we have wet seeds.
Right.
Wet seeds will be like the tomato seeds.
Yeah.
So dry seeds like beans, peas, cilantro. We just remove them from the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wash it, just drop it, cleaning them well, and yep. you store in a paper bag, and you put in a tight container. Could be this mason jar,
yeah,
or just a tin, those old things with tea or coffee.
Right.
You just store in there in a dry place in the dark.
Yeah.
And don't forget to label, because later you will know what it is. So label, summer 2025, peas, beans, or whatever you're collecting, and for next season you will have your own seeds. For tomatoes, you harvest your tomato with the wet seed, and you need them to put in a container with water, and they will rot.
Mm-hmm.
So the tomatoes, and because the tomato seeds, if you observe, are covered with a mucous membrane.
Right.
And you need to get rid of that. So the only way to get rid of that is by fermentation.
Yeah.
So put it in water, the tomatoes break down, that membrane will break down, and later you have to wash it until you get just the seeds.
Right.
The seeds will be spread in paper towels. You can use your grow lights,
mm-hmm.
use grow lights to dry them out. And again, once everything is dry out, put in paper bags and store it. There is advice in the books to store in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no fan of that. I'm just a simple jar in a dark space. That will be okay, because the seeds will be using for next year, so it's just very few months that they need to keep that alive.
Yeah. How long does that sort of fermenting and then washing and drying process take?
At least a week.
Yeah. Okay.
It takes a week. Yeah. So 3 days fermentation and then 1 day washing. You know, playing with the tiny little seeds of tomatoes or peppers. No, but peppers you can just collect from because they are dry,
mm-hmm.
and later drying out. Yeah. So that's wet seeds, very, very nice. There are other seeds like poppies. Last 2 weeks ago, we were talking about poppies. Those are, you need to collect the whole capsule,
mm-hmm.
Like a salt pepper, salt shaker, just like that. You have to collect the whole capsule and empty the capsule inside in a container. So it's quite exciting to do that. here at the Embark, we are growing traditional tobacco.
Yeah,
it's the same. The tiny little seeds. The pods are just opening, and the seeds are very sticky, so they are kind of stuck into the pod.
Right.
And so that is something that what we do is just cut the pod and store as it is, because the seeds, as I mentioned, they are sticky. So you don't want to have it in your fingers because they will stick in your fingers, and there is no way to get rid of that.
It's a messy business.
It's a messy business. So just as a pod, we've been learning that. Last year we harvest, so this year we know that.
And you're growing that traditional tobacco to help provide to indigenous groups for their ceremonial purposes.
One of the reasons is to learn about how to grow tobacco.
Yeah.
And the second is to link with the indigenous groups here in campus that are interested in growing tobacco, so we can provide seeds,
mm-hmm.
and as well provide some expertise how to grow them.
Yeah.
Besides that, we have tobacco seeds, tobacco leaves for anyone that, if they need it, we are happy to share here.
Great. Well, you know, seed collecting time and seed preparing time.
Yep.
I imagine you have a special place, you know, in the garden here and probably at home as well, where you keep the seeds?
Yes, I have a plastic container where all my seeds are labeled and stored in there. Usually it's close to my desk. not out of sight, because, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So I always try to see where are my seeds.
Right.
And part of that as well, I have together with my herbs.
Yeah.
I have collected all these herbs as well,
mm-hmm.
and a little Ziploc bag. So we have oregano, thyme, chamomile, lavender, lemon balm, all of them close together, because, you know, once you store it, you forgot that you had it, and later when you are looking for it, you cannot find it. So keep it all together in a place that you always see them,
and then you're ready for next year.
Correct. Ready for next year. So so slowly we have this week kind of a reminding the nature is reminding us what to do, and then we slow down and say, okay, what I had to start planning now.
Right.
The garden slowly is coming down, not much to harvest. Whatever is planting, the next thing that we are going to plant is garlic.
Yeah.
That is the big thing in the coming weeks. And after that, it's just trying to keep the plants alive, because now we have moved to the new garden, to new site at south of Maggie Bankston. And guess what? The deers found it.
Right, of course.
Some of our gardeners are not happy because the kale is just disappearing.
Yeah.
They are just coming and munching. So we have, if you people in campus, come in campus and you see, we have two different sides of garden beds, the very tall, 36 inches tall, and the 24 inches tall. Yeah. The 24 inches tall, they are being visited by the deers.
Yeah.
The 36, they are full of crops, nothing. They are not interesting. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay. So that as well is telling us that we should grow higher.
Right. And maybe put those shorter ones on little bases or something.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So they have visited all the lower planters, but not the higher planters. Okay. Okay. Excellent. Yeah. That's something that came. Yeah. The other thing that we, close to our garden, we have the Nahino Park Community Garden.
Yeah.
And last weekend, we had a bear visiting in there. And again, the bear has climbed on the apple trees. So the apple trees are all mangled.
Yeah.
And as well, some of the tomatoes from the neighboring plots have been eaten. So was as well. one of the gardeners shared that arrived at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the bear was perched in the tree, eating the apples. And after that, he went visiting all the plots. So... So this time, September, we have deers, wildlife is into the garden, and we as well need to be reminded that time to harvest our seeds and prepare ourselves for the coming winter.
And getting all the wildlife.
Enjoy the wildlife because, we have to be just sharing the space that they own, is the space that we're just sharing with them.
All right. Thanks so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. Tell us about how people can find out more about Embark.
So, you can find what Embark does during the coming academic year. Visiting our website at embarksustainability.org or following us in our social media channels at Embark Sustainability. There are lots of things coming. For instance, this week we start the summer cohort. We start with the distribution of food rescue and as well the community kitchen. So lots of things happening in the coming weeks.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo. We'll talk to you again next week.
See you next week.
If you have something to say about anything you hear here on CJSF, you can call us or text us here in the studio. Our studio line, which where we can receive text messages, and we'll see them right away, even during the program, is 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-2573. We'd love to hear your thoughts or comments on anything we're talking about on this show or on any of the other programs you listen to here on CJSF. That's 778-782-2573. That's our in-studio text line. Love to see you use it. Peter, you want to talk a bit about autism?
Well, really about people saying, I don't want my child vaccinated for the measles, for polio, because of the link.
Right.
That's what I'm going to bring up.
And this is something people have been talking about for a long time.
It has been. And it got compounded. It kind of snowballed. There was a woman who's kind of forgotten, Jenny McCarthy.
Right.
She appeared on, like, Oprah was this. So Oprah got involved, and at Coast to Coast AM sort of had Andrew Wakefield on. And then in 2016, Robert Kennedy Jr. did the Children's Defense League, or whatever it's called. And then because of COVID, it just kind of grew. Now,
right. So just for context, Jenny McCarthy was kind of a celebrity. She's... Andrew Wakefield was the fellow responsible for a study.
Yes, yes.
That was often cited and has since been, discredited.
Okay.
And of course, Robert Kennedy Jr. is currently the person in charge of healthcare policy in the United States.
Well, anyway, so what it is that it is genetic. The argument is that autism, the formal argument, is that it is a genetic cause for autism. Mm-hmm. Therefore, how could anything after the birth cause it to occur?
Right.
And actually, I saw like a debate with Dan Wilson. He has debunked the funk. And somebody else takes a side. It wasn't just the autism vaccine link. It was also a bit about ivermectin and two other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Don Wilson, the other one, said to the other people, they said, autism is, there's a genetic cause to it.
Right.
And I said, oh, really? And I checked up a bit into that. And I kind of said, well, I kind of thought to myself, they're not really using their cause, right? Because they kept arguing back and forth on this. The other side really didn't bring up any kind of saying, well, here's the other cause of it. So, and this is what I had on, as far as COVID goes, I'm still up in the air about what all that was about. And unfortunately, I sort of got, I've heard this 20 years ago. I was never really big on it. You know, mm-hmm. I was never big that this is true. I thought it was a bit strange. Also, that over the last years, we've had measles outbreaks. So yeah. It kind of said, well, I really should maybe kind of not really go with this. And when I found out really that thing about it being genetic. Now, what happened was in the early 90s, there was a lawyer, and he had a client who had who claimed that the vaccines caused their children to have autism. So this isn't really a medical thing. It is a law, a legal thing. And Andrew Wakefield, who is the physician in question, who is no longer considered legally a medical doctor, he got approximately $600,000, translated to American money, because he's British, payment from these lawyers. And his concept was to have this other vaccine that was going to be used instead of the vaccine.
Yep.
And that sort of gets lost in the whole shuffle also. And so it is basically maybe the people in question were not, I don't know. I mean, Andrew Wakefield, if you kind of, when I didn't get the point about the thing about it being genetic, you kind of hear him. You see, well, you kind of think he's a likable guy. Now I'm thinking that he kind of practiced that one up. But the other thing is that, usually you get vaccinated sooner than about 3 or 4 years. But I think with these
people... Yeah, I think as an infant, you get, depending on what it is, you get...
But in some cases, it can be later.
Yeah.
So what it is the early signs of autism are 6 months to 3 years. Formal diagnosis is 3 years to 7 years.
Yeah.
So I think what happened was these children got vaccinated and then these parents got the diagnosis, is what I kind of think happened. That's why it sort of coincided with that. And it just sort of snowballed. And now it's like COVID really kind of really took it because, I mean, myself, I don't know what happened with COVID. I'm not vaccinated for COVID. And we can, that's for another show. I did something about a year ago on that.
Mm-hmm.
But this right now, and it's sort of a problem because there is a, I don't know about polio, but the measles have been outbreaked.
Yeah.
So that's
both
not good.
In the U.S. and in Canada.
So to my fellow anti-COVID vaxxers, and whether I stay that way is another question, I say I don't go with the other argument that you shouldn't get children vaccinated for like the other thing.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to sort of come forth with that.
All right. Well, you know, the COVID vaccine is still available and provided free by the government for those who want to go get it. And you can usually just go down to your local pharmacy and make an appointment or sometimes do it as a drop-in. But, Stephen, you had some thoughts about why people... You know, I mean, autism isn't the only issue around which people seem to really, many people seem to be reaching for some sort of easy answer as to why things happen.
Yeah, I think so. As Peter was speaking, a new thought actually came to me, which is that I think, you know, people have vaccine hesitancy. That's not new. Mm-hmm. But why is it specifically in our culture there is this urge to blame the MMR vaccine for autism? Well, first of all, let's look at the facts. You know, the rise of autism is real. And it's not just a case of autism being more vigorously documented. There are more cases of autism in the last couple of decades. But the average age of conception, that is the average age at which people have children, have also become much later as well. And it is documented that later pregnancies are more correlated with autism, as well as some other genetic disorders, but definitely autism, especially if you have an older father, and older fathers are much more common nowadays. Mm-hmm. So that there are fairly straightforward explanations for autism that mm-hmm. don't rely on vaccinations or not vaccinations. Yeah. But I think to kind of look at the broader perspective of this, a lot of the debates around vaccine hesitancy in the United States and Canada, but really in the United States, there is this smug sense of, look at all these people who are know-nothings, who are kind of idiots or, you know, dumb people who refuse to take the vaccine because they don't know the science. And I think I find that attitude really off-putting. Mm-hmm. And in the sense that there's this idea that we who are educated have the science on our side, but the science is impartial. The science does not necessarily align with liberals or conservatives mm-hmm. or smart people or dumb people. The science is just the science. And in this case, I find the conversation in many cases kind of grating. Yes, the people who have vaccine hesitancy, there's maybe the sense of fear of mortality that, maybe if I don't eat this thing or eat that fruit or take this vaccine or not take this vaccine, my child won't have autism or be smarter or be better. And there is this general society-wide reluctance to reckon with the fact that a lot of things are actually outside of our control. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're genetic, but another way of saying genetic is that we do not control it with human actions. And I think in late modernity, there's this genuine societal reluctance to accept that there are simply things, massive chunks of our lives, that are without human control, out with human control, not in our control. And an attempt to formulate it into a form that's cognizable and controllable, that's a very understandable urge. But at the same time, this natural tendency to mock people who wish to have this control, mm-hmm. that's also... Actually, it loops back to something we were talking about earlier, which is that we have this very standardized model of society, you know, out of the home at 18, supposed to be independent, how people are supposed to behave, yeah. You know, take your vaccines. And I really urge people to take their vaccines. I have been vaccinated for everything that has been offered. But this idea, there's a standard model of how people are supposed to behave. I think we should try and adopt a more sympathetic, empathetic mm-hmm. attitude of saying, the world is a complicated place. It is okay to be confused, but let us help you to reach the best factually and scientifically informed conclusions instead of just mocking people for being ignorant.
And perhaps, I guess, you know, put more effort into, you know, explaining things and relying less on this sort of force of authority to why people
I think that if you look at the way initially during COVID, people were very respectful of epidemiologists, and then that authority collapsed. The reliance on authority is terrible. And I want to add one thing, which is mm-hmm. that going on MSNBC, Rachel Maddow show, and hectoring people for not doing this or doing that, not taking a vaccine or whatever, I don't think that's productive.
Okay. We're out of time here, Peter.
Okay, I said my piece on it. I thought just to say as